is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia Social Podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy?
I thought I was thinking too late of an intro. Damn it. Hi, I'm doing good.
I thought you were looking for like mochi or something.
Literally, I was like, oh, that's what's happening. Like a dog or a cat's in the room, but I'm just going, I don't know what I want to do.
I was looking for something, and then I noticed.
Put my hair down.
I noticed I have like a little Lego minifigure of the bad guy from Coco, and he's upside down for some reason.
Oh, an omen.
Also joining me is Kalex Everything. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I had a headache for a second. I'm like, I let my hair free.
Hooray.
I'm doing good. Yay. We're all together. I feel like it's been so long, even though it hasn't, but it has.
Those weeks kind of like the weeks where we either don't record or like one of us is gone, it feels like a long time for some reason.
It does feel like a long time.
So I hope everybody had a great Valentine's Day. We were recording this after the day after Valentine's Day. Didn't get a chance to do any kind of Valentine's Day theming stuff for the podcast, but it is what it is. I got a pink durag on today just to kind of say we did something. So
That's right. Oh, wait, really quickly, speaking about durags, there was a TikTok about, so you know when clouds get that wave print, like it's just like cloud after cloud after cloud?
I know where this
Someone did a TikTok of them going, God took off his durag today. Look at those waves. And then some people in the comments were like, he knows what month it is.
That's so fucking funny. So funny.
And then people were like, do you think he gets tired of us? It was so funny.
That's so funny.
I hope the Lord does have a pink durag on today.
Yeah, you know, he knows what month it is. He knows what month it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have much going on in terms of Valentine's Day stuff or romance anime stuff. But today we have a discussion about how great this new season of Jujutsu Kaisen has been as far as the Cullen Games arc. I talked about, for reference for the listeners, potentially doing some sort of like seasonal update, but it kind of got into a point where I was like, I feel like we just need to talk about how these past seven or so episodes of Jujutsu Kaisen have been, as far as the Cullen Games has gone. Zoe, I'll start with you because me and Kayla are manga readers, so we kind of already know what's going on. But Zoe, as far as your run through, because you got the first five, right?
Six.
Okay, so you got through the first six. You haven't seen the most recent one, but as far as those six that you did watch, you don't have to get into anything specific, but just like, what are your thoughts on like early thoughts as far as how the story's going?
Something that like now I'm thinking of because you mentioned being manga readers is how I want to know how different the experience is because. Mm. Out of the three, I've loved JJK since season one, but out of the three seasons, this is the most cinematic.
Yes.
In a way where they're like trying to tap into, and yes, there's a huge Kill Bill reference, but besides that, they're tapping into like filmmaking with like, if something's out of order, they letterbox it so the audience knows that it's, this either happened before or is happening meanwhile, something else is happening. The scene where Yuji meets Hikari and it's just from the door is super fucking cool. That's very much like a Park Chan-wook kind of thing where it's the camera's just from one side and barely moves. They're tapping into like filmmaking almost like Chainsaw Man taps into like the mangaka's love for filmmaking as well. I think it's very interesting, and I want to know how different the experience is versus reading it.
Kayla, do you want to start?
You can go first.
Okay. For me, it's one of those things where definitely was something I wanted to talk about today as far as like people's perceptions of how the adaptation is going if you're a manga reader. For me, I'm one of those people where it's like, okay, if it is a one-to-one adaptation, that is cool, and I'm okay with it, and I think that it lends itself to being a good anime. If it's, especially if the manga's good, and like it's, if it's a one-to-one shot, it's not a big deal. Like the first 2 seasons of, well, the first season specifically of JJK is pretty much kind of shot to shot, like it shot is. For shot for manga panels. This season specifically adds so much to certain panels, or does some stuff totally differently, and genuinely, like, I like it like that. Because sometimes, like, I don't know how far you got, but like, okay, but like the whole situation with Hikari and Yuji's scene, right? That scene is supposed to be more comedic, low key, that, and it flips on its head. It's supposed to be like a situation where they're having a casual conversation that's kind of funny and kind of lighthearted, and then switches as soon as Yuji says that he doesn't know Satsuma.
But as a manga reader,
you watch the scene in the anime, you're like, okay, I know where the twist is coming, but the tone of this right now is so much more.
It's very
menacing, kind
of. It's very The Departed. Have you seen The Departed?
I have, yes.
When Jack Nicholson takes his gun out and Leo's character gets freaked out, it's very much that, and it's really fucking cool.
Yeah. Kayla, you...
So I was going to say, in reference to what Andre said about this season being very cinematic, I think that that's happening in general with this studio. Like, the studio that makes Jujutsu Kaisen and a couple other
They make Chainsaw Man.
They as a whole are going, what if we stopped being so 2D in terms of, like, not that they're doing 3D work, but that everything has always been like a panel like this, and now everything is like, what if our drawings were a long shot camera moment, and we're just starting to do it together, which is very fun. So it feels like scenes like, and it's only because I saw this the other day for Galentine's, but like Pride and Prejudice, where it feels like one shot, and obviously the cameras aren't doing that. There are no cameras. It's animated this way, but they're being held to the same regard, which is really cool for movie lovers alike, and for people who love a good scene. So as a manga reader, this season in particular, I had been begging for, because the Culling Game, I had to read those panels. Maybe I'm stupid. I had to read those panels 14 times.
Episode three helps.
I was like,
yes, it does.
It's a godsend. It's great.
It's a godsend, and it's so important. And there's like the breakdown of like, oh, so this means this, and I'm like, yes, Yuji, thank you, because I'm the same stupid. So, like, reading it, I remember, because I had it on my phone, I was just like, no, it's not happening today. But watching it, I'm like, oh, okay, it's making sense. I understand the rules. It felt like math the first time. So, I very much appreciate this, because it feels to me like the Hunger Games, where it's like there are rules and regulations that just make more sense if I see it played out. I'm not reading the rules. I'm building the Legos freehand. Like, I'm not looking at the map. So, yes, I'm very much enjoying the adaptation in the anime, because this is a hefty book chapter.
Yes, it is. I want to specifically highlight the opening to the first episode, not the OP, the way it's Yuta about to stab Yuji, and then it goes back of how they got, of how something gets set up, and then they go back again, and then it leads into, like, the moment leading into Yuta almost stabbing Yuji. It's like, like the craziest Chris Nolan memento going back and forth type shit. It's super fucking cool.
I love how you think Christopher Nolan, and I think of Lion King 1.5, where Timon, where Timon goes, it's the story within the story.
I used to love that movie.
Lion King 1.5 people poo on it all the time. It's art. It's so good. It's so good. Anyway,
it's definitely a movie that I definitely ran to the ground as a child for sure.
Oh, yeah. I tired out that DVD. I was like, I don't get. Run it up. And I feel like I'm going to do that with this season because I've seen all of Jujutsu Kaisen, I think, 3 times already. Because whenever anyone wants to start, I'm like, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Sit down, which I will be doing again with Hansel.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we're going to see it again, and it's going to, again, sink deeper into my brain. Also, as a manga anime person, there are some anime that do not capture the essence of the grit that the manga has. Like, sometimes the drawings are just better than it animated.
It's like too polished.
It's too polished. It almost looks like when like AI cleans up something and you're just like, oh, this is not the same art. Like when we saw the Interstellar.
We saw the Daft Punk Discovery anime. It's called 555 Interstellar, the story of the secret star system.
Thank you.
But it was upscaled with AI. It was upscaled with AI.
Yeah, it was horrible.
And a lot of it was horrid. Super, like, in the background. Like, all the faces were kind of, like,
too blurred. Gross. Yeah, it's kind of like when you put a beauty filter on a beauty filter, and then you just keep going. So some anime feel that way because the animators don't have the time, or they don't have that person's style down pat, so you cannot get it, you know, one to one. Jujutsu Kaisen is one of those like the people that make the Jujutsu MAPPA. Kaisen, the studio in MAPPA, they are like, I'm gonna absorb Gigi into my hands, and I'm gonna spit out their exact beautiful image in color. So I am obsessed with watching it because it's so delicious. The scenes are so smooth, and they do such a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that with going back to like episode one, episode three are so funny because it's like, I think episode one served its purpose when it does the whole color game thing and is showing you the rules at like a fucking, like, 2x pace.
No, that's why. The first episode, I'm like...
I think it's on purpose.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to, like, highlight how frantic of a scene this is, or, like, how all these rules are being thrown at you so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's, like, you're just in the dark and confused about the rules as the actual characters are.
Yes. So
that's why when you actually meet Tengen for the first time, and he's, like, breaking down everything... it's such a great episode for a specific show like this, where it's so fast paced and so quick that you tend to miss things a lot of the time. And I think what's funny is that's one of the biggest knocks on JJK for some reason, is that people just don't understand what's going on. But I feel like if they, and this is not a knock on anybody specifically, if you just like sit and like either read it, like legitimately read what's on the page, or you just kind of like actually hear or listen to what the characters are saying, it really is not that hard of a concept to grasp. And that's why I think
phone down.
Thank you. And then also people not liking episode 3 is like, people rating episode 3 super low is, I think, a reason for people having that weird knock on JJK. It's like, they're literally just doing an entire episode.
To hold your hand.
Yeah.
It's a pretty exposition dump. That's all it is. It's a very pretty to look at exposition dump. And as long as you just listen to what's being said and what's going on, it's not that hard of a concept to grasp.
I will say, though, when Tengen has that giant chart about, like, this is what we're going to do next. Yeah. I was like. And they're going here, and Maggie's going over there, and. Oh, I literally feel like I would have just been Chozo, and I'm like, I'll stay behind.
I think that's, it's very funny if people are like, oh, episode 3 boring, and then I don't understand what's going on. Pay attention to episode 3!
it wasn't flashy. Jingle, jingle. Yeah. The back doors. Jingle, jingle. Like,
the bite of 87.
You have to sit down and you have to be with it. And it's entertaining the way that they do it. So it's yes, you're not having an insane fight scene, but I promise you it'll happen in episode 4. Just sit down.
Yeah. Just
Just sit down.
Speaking of like, I think episode 4.
No, you're speaking. I want to get there in a second, but I want to talk about Utah real quick.
Oh, okay.
For somebody that watched, JJK Zero, did you watch JJK Zero? Okay.
In IMAX. Yes.
Okay. So watching that and seeing Yuta as a main character, and then seeing him look kind of like a villain in episode 1 of Culling Games, like, what was your initial reaction to that?
Okay, so he's kind of introduced as the opposition at the end of season 2.
Yeah.
When he has that really fucking cool scene of the kid seeing a cursed spirit, and it's like the really creepy face.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it was more of a surprise when Yuji wakes back up and he's like, oh, good, you're alive.
It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Like, obviously, Yuta has been through so much because him and Yuji's lives are kind of parallel in the way that, like, these things happened to them. They are very strong. And because they're so strong, they didn't know what to do with their powers. So in the beginning, like, I'm like, I wouldn't put it past Yuta to be like, well, this is kind of the way that the sorcerers are keeping me alive because I'm a threat. So I'm going to have to do this favor for them and kill Yuji. And I was like, please, no, because I love him in Zero. Like, that I was just tuck you in and keep in my pocket forever. So I was like, oh my God, girl, like, just like prepare. When I was reading it, I was like, all right, I'm going to cry on my phone. It's fine. I'm going to cry on my phone. And then having like that, whoa, are you all right, bud? And him being voiced by my favorite character from Toilet Bound, Hanako-san, made me even happier because he's such a brat in that show. So his little bag under his eyes.
What I do fear, because again, I didn't read the manga, I do fear another, you know, the friend Yuji makes in season 1 that ends up being turns into a cursed spirit. I fear maybe not that either of them are going to turn into a cursed spirit, but I do fear that they're building a friendship of the two goofy guys, and then something tragic is going to happen.
Hey, guess what? It's all tragic.
Yeah,
like, yeah, the entire arc is just tragic.
Don't get attached to anybody.
But specifically, I think it's because there's already a pact where it's like he asked him, if Sukuna takes over, I'm going to need you to kill me.
Right.
And I think that's not going to happen. I think something else is going to happen, and they're still going to end up fighting somehow.
Okay. I'm not going to spoil anything for you because I think it's important for whatever happens to make sure it catches Zoe off guard so we can use the content.
Correct.
I will say, I had a thought I was going with this, but basically, yeah, this entire Culling Games arc is super tragic. Don't attach yourself to anybody per se. But no, go ahead, Kayla.
Speaking of tears, episode 4. Anybody else cry? Yeah. Didn't mean.
I think it was okay. Maki going in and absolutely kicking the teeth in of the Zenin clan was more cathartic.
Yes.
Than it was sad for me.
So I was able to pick up my tears because she's beating the dog doo-doo out of her abusive family. But when Mai and Maki are having that moment in her domain before she says goodbye, and then Maki sees Mai as a kid again. Take my heart. And she's like, burn it all down.
Yeah.
I would.
You know what's really funny? Really, I'm watching this and she's having that confrontation with her father where it's like, my two disappointments. Right. And it like dawned on me. I was like, did they ever explain why their family hates them? So I Googled it. It was like, why does the Zenin clan hate Mai and Maki? And basically Google was like, oh, because they're deep misogynist. And I was like,
yes.
Oh, makes sense. Yes. Okay.
Okay. Here's the thing. Okay. Yeah. The one mostly knock, men. This is my one knock on this season so far is that either to my knowledge or I just missed it, they don't really go into the real dynamics of the Zenning clan. It really is just
Correct.
Maki.
They're cutting it. Yeah. They're cutting it short.
Because, so I'll explain it. Zoe's correct. Like, their entire Zenning clan is very, very, very misogynistic. On top of the fact that Maki and Mai's birth was kind of a issue. So basically,
that's why I was like, it's not just because they're misogynistic, because there are other women in the clan that are important.
Yes, but here's the big issue, right? So since Mai and Maki are twins and were born at the same time, somebody had to take curse energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that like Mai took all of it, and then Maki was born with heavenly restrictions. So she was born with no curse energy. Problem is, when Mai and Maki were born at the same time, Mai didn't receive like all of the cursed energy that a child would have when they came out of the womb, and so she was a significantly weaker of a sorcerer than some of the other people in the clan, and so you have that issue. So like Mai has a cool curse technique, but it really is kind of shitty when you really get into the nitty gritty of it. She can just create. She has the power of creation, but it takes so much of her to just create small things. That's why she can only create bullets.
Right.
And so it's like, it's... No, go ahead, Kayla.
It's also that their birth was also blocking one of the stronger children in the line to become the next head, no?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And that's why they're like, oh my God, not only are you girls and not only are you twins, but you're also blocking this next prodigy.
Yes.
So it's like several layers.
Yeah, and so then it's a situation where like one of them has to die in order for the other one to fully realize their ability. Mm-hmm. And since like Maki's the kind of like the only one that realistically could get out of the shackles of the clan because she doesn't have a curse technique, because she's arguably as strong as, or has the potential to be as strong as Toji.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one of the other heavily restriction created people in the Zenning clan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, and the thing is they don't explain that. They do explain in the manga. They explain it that like one of them has to die for the other to be fully realized as a sorcerer.
That's why they always beat Maki as a child because they were like, oh, she reminds us so much of Toji, who was this other, you know, bastard child who was stronger with nothing.
They say something in passing when she kills Ogi, their dad, and the whole clan is on alert. One of the foot soldiers tells like the lieutenant, can't you see? She's becoming like Toji, and she's just as strong. Like they say, like in passing.
Yeah. And so you have that, and then also. Like Mai, since she was the one of the two of them was the only one with the curse technique, she was held in a higher regard, but still the fact that she was a woman was kind of restricting for her, and that's why like Naoya was able to kind of mistreat her, and that's why low key, and I know this is like, I can't remember if this is like real or not, but low key, the Zenning clan in their conservatism and in their misogynistic kind of tendencies kind of like had a little bit of like incestual kind of situation where like they were kind of putting their like Mai in a situation where she would have to like have certain relations with second and third cousins in the clan and stuff like that.
So
this is a whole kind of fucked up situation. That's why I think it was so cathartic watching Maki go back and just absolutely dog walk everybody in there, man.
Absolutely cathartic. It was just like the fact that So when Mai's explaining, you know, to Maki as she's getting ready to pass, that she's like, you know, Jujutsu rules don't understand that we're two people.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be one person because we're identical twins. I was like, that's like, they're so different and they try to be so different, but they're both born of like the same soul. I was just like, what? I'm gonna be like this. So, and the fact that Maki continues to like talk to Mai as she's killing all these people, like, in her head. She has a very similar, like, the way that she carries her sister is very similar to the way that Yuta carries Rika.
Yep.
We won't talk about that anymore.
Because you're about to start crying.
Because I'll cry, but also because they also, I don't want to spoil anything for Andre.
True. But Zoe, I know you want to talk about the Kill Bill reference in the scene where she's actually killing people.
Yeah, it is.
When
I heard, oh, it's like Kill Bill, I was like, oh, woman, lot of guys, right? No, it's like in the middle of a tea house and the floor is glass and there's a shot from under the floor up as she's walking, which is legit out of Kill Bill. Like, and then everything's kind of like in black and white because Kill Bill kind of plays with the lighting.
Yeah.
It's a lot louder. The big thing about Kill Bill is that scene has no music in it.
Oh.
But it's still, it's pretty much like one for one Kill Bill. It's really fun. And even when she's done with everyone and there's blood literally everywhere, it's like, okay, yeah, this is Tarantino. This is Kill Bill.
I love that. Yeah.
I love the, like, how it's done. Because obviously you know that Maki is now kind of freed from the shackles of and having a fully realized version of Heavenly Restriction. So she's just super fucking strong. And she's just like absolutely just slaughtering people. One thing I will say is, like, you know, you mentioned in the beginning of the episode about like what this scene for a manga reader is for just an anime only watcher. And one of those things is like how emotion is conveyed on manga panels versus in anime, and I feel like having the Kill Bill references and like treating it like that makes sense for an anime or animation medium. In the manga, it's literally just like Maki's killing these people, but it does that thing in manga where it's like the person's face just blacked out, and it's just her. It's just one eye.
Yeah.
So it's like you see like Maki's. You get more of an idea of Maki's outward appearance or headspace in the manga, where she's just on a mission to murder every single person in that room.
Yeah.
And then in the anime, it's like you don't necessarily get that headspace, but you just see her just start just slaughtering people.
Yeah.
And one thing I thought was cool, though, is, and this is one thing people didn't like about the scene, is that the music choice. They thought the music should have been more like heavy and like orchestral, but I'm like,
I thought it was awesome.
It being more upbeat and kind of jazzy and kind of like
she's happy to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's why I like. I'm like,
It also that's kind of been JJK's thing since last season.
Yeah,
they have some top notch jazz production on the soundtrack. Like that scene where what is it, like, Gojo saves people in like 0.7 seconds or some shit like that.
Oh, in the subway.
It's just freeform jazz, fucking
it is.
The drum. Like it's sick. So again, it just matches the motif that they've been setting. Then what was I gonna something that was very surprising, but kind of in a negative way. The only like critique I have of this season in general is how Maki is reintroduced. I don't know how it is in the manga. In the anime, Yuji's walking down to like the room that they all meet up in, and she's just there, and she's like, "Hi." The last time I saw you, you were burned to a crisp.
It's almost kind of the same.
It's basically like, I'm here too. I found Tengen.
That's so nuts.
It's so funny because I think it just kind of really highlights, one, just how like numb to people dying that Jujutsu sorcerers are. Just the culture of Jujutsu sorcerers is like, if somebody dies or somebody's alive, it's like, oh, okay, hello.
Right.
But also, too, it's like, I think Yuji's mental state, or like Yuji's like outward appearance as a person, even like Yuta's too, is like they're like, oh, hey, Maki, nice to see you. Oh my God, your scars. It's like,
yes.
Right.
Did you not just see what happened to her? Not even
I don't
a
know
couple
why,
days ago?
I don't know why it reminded me of the SpongeBob movie where he goes, Patrick and I, hi. And Patrick doesn't let him finish. He just goes, Patrick, hi. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I was like, you could have maybe eased into like, wow, she's alive.
No.
Yeah.
Because the thing is I don't think that's how Gigi thinks. Or that's how they think that the sorcerers think. Because like, they're just worried about the big problem currently. So, sure, oh my God, sense. They're alive. Great. Another person here. Keep going, Tengen. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the word?
Right. Because a lot of big moments in Jujutsu Kaisen happen so fast, and you don't get the deep dive until a lot later or not at all. You just kind of like, oh, I just accepted this as a thing. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
And also, you got to think too that like all of the events that are happening right now happen within a span of like a month.
Yeah.
If you really think about that, like
yes.
in real human lifetime, it's been several years since the story is spanning. In the plot of the Jujutsu Kaisen, like all this happens within a year. Two years.
And if you think about it, Kenjaku has been plotting this for centuries.
For hundreds of years.
Literally centuries. So he's like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. It's
kill everybody.
When they meet up with Tengen, they literally say, it's been 9 days since October 31st, when it's been like a year and a half for everyone else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And you mentioned Kenjaku. I really want you guys to see that the most recent episode because there's a line in there.
Yeah.
I know you know, Kayla, but there's a line in there that I really wanted to kind of touch on because I really want to see Zoe's reaction to it. What?
Well,
what if we just tell him?
There's a little. There's like a little. Like. Jab earlier that Kenjaku's not Yuji's dad. Kenjaku's Yuji's mom. Does that have anything to do with it?
Yes. That's how I want to see your. Did you see the scene?
No, I was like, earlier in the season. Oh, when Yuta kills him, and he's having a dream of his grandpa being like, don't trust that lady, and Yuji's dad is being weirdly smiley, so it's like, oh, that's Kenjaku. And then his mom walks in with the fucking scars on her head, and I was like, ah,
yeah.
And it has to do with that.
Yeah, there's another part that I need you to see because I wanted to connect those two points together, but I need you to see that point. I need to see that the most recent episode first before I get into that.
Okay,
we can do that.
Kenjaku just be birthing everybody. That man's getting around town.
Yeah.
Man.
To build an army.
I think... I don't want to get into any spoiler territory when it comes to him because how his character arc developed is one of the biggest knocks I have on Jujutsu Kaisen. I don't want to get into too much specifics. But I think...
Wait, not
early on, I think it wasn't fully realized. I think how he went out, it was kind of bullshit.
Oh,
I'm not gonna lie.
Wait, you mean like how he exists? Like I'm like, oh, no, that's no. pretty cool.
Because he's a really cool villain. I think, and he's a really cool.
Really
villain,
insanely
like,
cool villain.
What if I just take off my headphones for a second or something?
No.
And then I don't listen to the podcast later.
Yeah, this specific like 34 minutes. Don't listen to the podcast. but I think I'll just talk about him early on, especially like when you meet him in Shibuya with him sealing Gojo and stuff like that. I think his overall like introductions was great. Because obviously you know him as Gato from JJK Zero, and then you see them with like if you watch that movie and then you watch JJK, then you see
realize.
The lines. So obviously, you realize it might be a different person. Or it might just be a situation where somebody took over his body. And then you have scenes like that where you're getting this information now where it's like, okay, so what do the lines on his forehead mean? You know what I'm saying? It's just like very, very cool how they set him up and what he's been doing for the past like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years leading up to this moment.
I think the reveal, because in the beginning, I think the reveal of Geto and Kenjaku being one body is one of the best surprise gotcha things that I'd seen in a while in an anime, because the entire first season before Jujutsu Kaisen Zero had come out, I'm like, oh, this is an enemies to lovers, you know, lovers to enemies story. And obviously one day Geto's gonna wake up and realize the error of his ways and become good and doodly doo. And then you watch the movie and you're like, that man is dead.
Yeah.
what are we talking about? And I personally thought that maybe he had done something with his curse technique because he can absorb demons or curse spirits, that I'm like, oh, he's done something to reanimate himself. But that's still fully him.
Through the because power he was, of racism.
He was literally calling human beings monkeys. Yeah. Like I was like, okay, like he's done something, whatever. But when he kept like avoiding Gojo, I'm like, well, he's avoiding it because that's his lover. Like that's Rai, like he's not doing this. But the fact that Gojo was like, you look like you feel like you, like my soul recognizes your soul. The most in love thing I've ever heard in my life. but he was like, that's not you. Ooh, that was so good. And the fact that he like starts, like when he splits his head.
Yeah, he takes off his head.
And the fact that Geto, dead. But the body remembered and tried to stop him. Come on. Gigi, when I catch you, Gigi, in these streets. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I just talk about that because that specifically, I know he was several other bodies, and he's a very messy political man, a messy, messy brain. Yeah. But what he did to those two was evil.
And that's why Chozo and Yuji are brothers.
Yes. Exactly. And they could have had a really happy family. They could have adopted the two little girls with their cell phone, and they could have adopted Yuji.
Right.
I'm not beating the monkey allegations.
Right. It's just you have a situation where now. This is one thing I like about him, is like this has been like a plan
for eons,
right? And now you have a situation where like all these sorcerers from thousands and thousands of years ago are now coming into play. And this is one thing that like I think is cool about, this is why I wish you guys watched the most recent episode, because they explain this where like they go, where like they I'm not yelling at you guys. But no, basically, like, okay. They're how sorcerers from 1,000 years ago treat fighting or treat their lives is different than the Jujutsu sorcerers of today. And so it's like, it's interesting kind of a dynamic, and that's something that's like a key issue at play when Megumi, Yuji, and all these people start actively getting involved in these fights.
Specifically the reason why people will learn to understand Sukuna and Megumi's situationship. Like the reason why, like the way the sorcerers treated each other back in the day, understanding that makes you understand why Sukuna hasn't killed Megumi.
Yeah. Yuji even mentions once, he was like, I need to figure out Sukuna. He's going to use Fushiguro for something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can we talk about Megumi for a second? What I mentioned earlier?
Go ahead.
Guys, listeners, friends, family. So because I was busy, I've been trying to catch up by watching in English so I wouldn't have to like look at the screen. Because again, I've read it. I wanted to be able to hear it so I could talk about it for the podcast. I hadn't read these chapters in a while. And obviously I would sit and pause when I knew there was a fight so I could see the scenes, whatever.
Yes.
So I'm listening to this in English. And Chozo, great. Yuji, girly pop, but he's also kind of girly pop in Japanese, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Why was I looking away from my screen, and I was coming out, I'm coming look like this? Why does Megumi sound like a 35-year-old man? It's weird. The way he talks to Yuji, he'll be like, I just spat. He's like, don't worry about that right now. Are you A predator? What are you doing talking to me? I literally, I'm like, you're supposed to be in high school.
Who's his English voice actor?
I don't know, but he's playing too old.
I think it's better than Aki from Chainsaw Man. I think Aki sounds way too old.
Aki's a grown man.
But he sounds 60. He's like 24. Well, he's like 24.
Yeah, but he's a smoker.
I don't mind Fushiguro's voice.
It feels wrong.
I think Yuji's English voice is iconic solely because.
Oh, that's funny.
He was in that Megan Thee Stallion song where he goes, I'm Yuji Itadori and I love a woman with a fat ass.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I like Yuji's English speaking voice. I think he did a good job. And I love Gojo's English speaking voice.
Did you
ever
watch Star versus the Force of Evil?
Yes, I did.
Okay, Yuji is Marco.
Oh, I love that.
It's the same. It's the same guy.
I love that. All this to say, we need more people for anime dubs because I'm like, there had to have been a younger choice than this.
Okay. See, you bring up a good point. Even though I don't fully agree with your take on Fushiguro, these studios, at least in English, use the same people. And yes, and it's always fun to be like, oh, Matt Mercer, Erica Lindbach, like that's fun.
Right.
But also, Draken from Tokyo Revengers is supposed to be in middle school, and he sounds 30 years old.
Yeah, I don't like that. You need to let them be young. And then if they try to do it, they typically, I'm so sorry, I'm interrupting you, Taylor. A girl will end up voicing the character.
Mm-hmm.
And that works sometimes for some characters, but you need to cast better. Because Megumi is not feminine and not young enough. Like, it should be, I'm trying to figure out, like, the equivalent of what I feel like he would sound like. Of someone in English.
American Dragon Jake Long. Just without the black scent.
Wait, it's not a bad idea.
Black scent, that's funny.
He does have a little bit of that.
Without the black scent, it's hilarious.
Or Zuko.
Yeah!
I think maybe, like, the guy does Zuko.
Zuko would have worked.
Well, he's older now, so it's a little bit different.
But he can still do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, the guy's name is Robbie Damon.
Robbie Damon!
Yeah,
from Critical Role! You know what? Actually, he's a very good Peter Parker. He should have probably used a deeper Peter Parker instead of this, whatever he's doing.
I don't know what this is, but no.
I still like you, Robbie Damon.
No. Well, I like him, too. Yes. It's just put
She's
that...
She's lying.
I would have preferred to hear that voice for Ghetto.
That made sense. Gento's English voice actor is pretty good too. I can't remember.
It's fine. I mean, I prefer Gojo's English voice actor to Ghetto's, but when he goes like, "You crying? Yes, I am actually."
Oh, we've had this conversation. I'm almost positive we've had it on the podcast, which is why you would love Ichiban from Yakuza because it's the same guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was gonna say. The Tokyo Revengers one, you're like, oh, Draken sounds like he's 30 years old. That's because the manga itself makes everybody look like they're 45. So I think it's one of those things where having a deep voice
doesn't like
really matter to me.
I'll also smack it, though, for the blonde lady. Oh, my God. The blonde lady that's talking to Tengen.
Yuki.
She has short blonde. Yuki, is that her name? Mm-hmm. I think she sounds too young. I feel like the way that they carry her in the manga and even like the way that she presents herself in the show, I feel like that's an older woman who is well traveled, and I feel her voice should be more sultry. Fine as all hell, but I feel like she should sound more sultry and more seductive. Whereas in the show, she sounds a little older, but she's still like, should I stay here? No, stop. Bring it down one octave, more altos, please.
Yeah.
When I start my voice acting career.
Because her Japanese voice actress has a little bit of bass in her tone, I think.
Yes,
her,
she's got. Yes, she does.
A little bit of bass in the tone.
She whisper talks a lot. Like, she's talking down to you a lot. For those who like that.
Yeah, I guess. All right, let's go. Let's talk about the Hakari episodes really quick.
Mm.
Because I love those episodes. Also, great trans representation with Kirara.
Yes. Kirara? Kirara. They mentioned it Kirara. Where Fushiguro's like, I thought the other third year is a boy. And Panda goes, yeah. And that's as far as they go.
One of the funniest tweets I've ever seen was somebody posted that clip and said they don't have internet. Because like you gotta let them slide. They don't have internet.
Yeah. Even for that, I was a little like, okay.
Yeah, they do it kind of similar in the manga too, where like it's kind of like a quick little, like Panda's like, I don't know if it's Panda or Megumi, but it's like, oh, you talking about the one, like, isn't Kirara a boy or something like that?
Yeah.
And it was like, it kind of just, not necessarily brush it off, but don't really say too much about it.
Kirara's a boy.
There's like art that Gege made.
Sorry, it was the thing glitched for a second, so like Taylor's talking and there's delayed Kirara's a boy.
But they show, I think Gege made a drawing of what Kirara looked like before fully like expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. And I guess or transitioning. And you could, and like Kirara looked like it had like the bowl cut. And like yes. this kind yes. of like not didn't have any piercings and stuff like that. So they look definitely more masculine presenting. And then you get into this one, and like if nobody would have said anything, I would have thought Kirara was a girl. And I think that was the point. But it's just one of those. I like their design a lot.
Yeah, it's fun.
And their curse technique is super cool.
Also, so they're supposed to be gender neutral. So they're a non-binary person.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So Panda is still wrong either way.
Well, here's the thing. I think that he was being right. It's kind of like in Spanish, there isn't a term for non-binary people because our language is gendered. Mm. Japanese is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Asian ones, which is why they use different terms, but those terms also kind of sound like slurs sometimes, so they don't use them. So I'm pretty sure that like boy, it's kind of like when someone's a he, they, I think it's probably like that, like the way that they present themselves or carry themselves, they prefer
And even in Japanese in the subtitles too, they use they and them pronouns with Kirara anyways.
Right.
Even in like the Japanese, like when Megumi's talking about their curse technique and how to defeat it, they're like he always uses they them regardless of the context. But also her or their curse technique specifically is very, very cool with the use of like the constellations and how it's like not really four together. They're all like spread out in this like 3D kind of realm. And how they can kind of manipulate space to kind of move around. And it's very similar. I know Panda mentioned it. It's very similar to Gojo's technique of infinity.
Yes. Like, he literally really says it feels like Gojo.
Yeah.
I didn't see the episode, but I've obviously read that point in the manga. But was there no Brazilian funk happening in the background on TikTok?
No, man.
They should have missed opportunity.
I love...
In 3 minutes, Hikari will effectively be immortal.
I love Panda. Funk on it. I love Panda. Because with Panda, whenever they bring him out, they like add a little bit of more comedy into it.
Yeah,
where he's being super serious, but when I love when he meets Yuji in the ring and they're not really fighting. It's all, they're just tapping each other and he's going,
when you first see Maki again with Tengen and they're talking about like the rules and whatever, they're like, well, if Panda doesn't play, would he even be affected? He doesn't even have a brain.
Yeah.
And it's just him facing the other way, sitting and going,
I do love Panda, dude.
I do too.
Yeah. I do think they opened with Panda's, sometimes Pandas Do Cry. That was like 2 minutes long.
It was awesome.
I felt I was it was great, but I was like, dang, that was a whole chapter. Like in the manga, that whole longer
chapter, a lot of, like, we get a lot of Panda's backstory and like his
Principal
life
Yaga.
And...
Principal Yaga. No, go ahead. What you got? Is Mochi giving you some problems?
No, no, no.
Do you have a panda? Yeah! Oh! Baby! He's that so cute. Cool.
I love him.
Do they?
They. No, go ahead.
No, it was just my. Because I don't remember. Because I remember all of his story because of the manga. I don't remember how much they reveal in the anime. I don't want
to
get like.
I feel like there's more to be revealed.
There is.
Okay.
For Panda. Okay. They reveal it in a later.
Yeah.
Part of the story. When cool. a different character is introduced.
Uh huh.
The okay. one yeah. you know what I'm talking about? Well, yeah,
yeah, okay, I do. Yeah,
when a different character is introduced and them and Panda have a fight, you get more backstory on Panda. But you get a situation where you kind of start to understand how Panda was created in that situation with Principal Yaga.
I was about to say, I kind of guess
how when he explains how the cursed corpses were created.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you get a situation. And I love, like, Principal Yaga's... I hate that he died, but it's one of those things where...
his dad.
Yeah, that whole situation with the kid, with Takeru, was super sad. And how he helped Kusakabe out with that, with his either little brother or little cousin or something like that.
Something like that.
And... I don't know. It's like one of those things where you kind of, it's cool. I'm getting to this point where I'm saying it's cool to understand how, for this arc specifically, Gege does a great job of giving you more advanced concepts of the world building. So that way, when you get towards the end of the story and a bunch of shit is happening, you actually, if you had paid attention in the beginning, you would know how stuff works, or you just have more of a good idea of what the world building actually is as far as the power system. And for Principal Yaga's thing, talking about the cursed corpses, which is cool, so you understand mm-hmm. more about Panda later. Then, but even still, introducing how cool Kirara's mm-hmm. cursed technique is,
mm-hmm.
understanding, like, and even some of the fights that we'll see later on, like, understanding those simple concepts that have, like, stood the test of time when it comes to cursed energy and cursed techniques and stuff like that. So that way, when you get to all the way towards the end of those final fights, all uh-huh. that stuff starts to make sense because you had that background. That's one thing I think I really like about this arc specifically.
Mm.
What were you about to say, Kayla?
Something dawned upon me. Because I'm... upon me because now that I'm, you know, now that I'm rewatching and re-talking about Jujutsu Kaisen, and a lot of people hate on Jujutsu Kaisen in later seasons or later chapters, because I feel like Gigi loves world building a lot like Oda, where it's like, I want to show you all of these young, like, ideas that I have, and I want to show you, like, all these things that could be possible, and they're going to, like, break it down, but they're very scientific about the way that they break it down to you. And no one would listen unless they dangled Gojo in the front of it, right? So they were like, okay, I'll give you shiny, best bratty boy just to start watching the show, and then I'm going to pull it back. Will you still watch? And people have not liked when, like, literally this season as a whole is not doing as well as other seasons. Why? Gojo's not in there. And I, like, it just makes me also think of Apothecary Diaries, where our main boy was not supposed to be in there forever.
Mm.
But people loved him. And then that's kind of where the manga decided to go. So I feel like Gigi's misunderstood.
So Kayla,
I feel like they have much more to say.
Kayla's saying, we live in a society, basically.
one thing I like about his world building, specifically for this arc, is you start to kind of see
his
how. Okay. We don't know. I don't want to assume, but I'm just saying.
I still think they're a girl, but
I also think they're a girl.
Who knows?
Ain't nobody write a man that good. That's a man.
Ain't nothing.
I had 4 biscuits and ate one.
And I ate one.
Now I only have three.
What were you saying about world building, Taylor?
Like the introduction of more complex curse techniques.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, obviously Gojo's is probably the most complex that we get early on, I think. And everybody else is very pretty much straightforward in what they do. This arc specifically, especially with the introduction of so many sorcerers from like years and years and years past. One thing I like about this specific arc is just how much Gege really expands on the world building that they have set up. So you have Kirara's curse technique, where it's kind of like Gojo's, but it's super like confusing to, it's confusing if you don't know how to approach it with like having that north star and being able to move and manipulate. It's based on like a constellation.
Yeah.
That's not really, and the stars are not necessarily like next to each other. They're like, they form a diamond in the eye of somebody looking at them, but in space, they're actually pretty spaced away from each other.
Yeah.
So it's like a cool like way to do the movement. And then when they throw the coin and start moving forward.
Yep.
Like that part specifically, like in the manga, they kind of do that a little bit and it's like kind of cool, but they really expanded on that part specifically. And it's like, that was such a cool moment where they are just throwing the coin and getting it back and keep throwing it and getting it back and just are able to move in front of Megumi. So that way Megumi can't like fully figure out the curse technique. I thought that was super cool. And then we kind of get a small glimpse of Hikari's in that long shot scene.
Yeah, with the subway doors.
With Yuji. Yeah.
Which, when I first saw it, I thought it was like, for some reason, I thought it was like web pages. I couldn't really, but then I see it. It's like the doors closing. I like, did he hurt Yuji at all? I can't even tell.
I kind of. It's like, I don't want to get too much into his curse technique.
Okay.
But, yeah, because it's like, it's, and you know, he's a perfect example too of like just how much more complex people's curse techniques are going to get, because explaining and when his chapter came out, when you finally get to understand what his curse technique is, for several days, weeks even, people were debating. Like, oh my God, Gege is just like throwing shit at the wall. Like, he's making so much more confusing. But the thing is, and when those episodes come out where he actually gets in a fight, we can revisit this conversation. It's one of those things where if you just pay attention to what's being said, it's not that hard of a curse technique to grasp. Sure. It's just the means in which he fights get so ludicrous that you're like, all right, man. Like, ludicrous is good.
He is a subway transformer.
Just no. His curse technique has something to do with a subway station.
Cool.
In episode 7, do you already meet Angel, Taylor?
No.
Or not yet?
Not yet. Okay. You're introduced earlier in the season to a sorcerer who calls himself Angel.
Yeah. I want to talk about it later just because very similarly, Chainsaw Man. The parallels. Angel,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You, in episode 7, Yuji and Megumi are actively become part of the Culling Games, and they're trying to find Higuruma.
Okay.
They're trying to find Higuruma. Okay. I can't remember if he got mentioned earlier in the story or not.
Doesn't sound familiar.
I have to see his face. Hold on.
He's the lawyer.
No,
he did get mentioned.
Did he?
I don't fucking know. I don't remember.
Am I blurring the lines?
They were trying to find Hikari first.
Yeah.
No, he's about to be seen. Okay.
Uh-huh. It's about to happen. He's, and I will say, not to get into any
spoiler territory. Everybody loves that man.
He's one of my favorite characters.
Oh, you're one
in
of
this arc. Oh. I love him. I love his character arc. He's so cool. Y'all are so dumb. Oh my god.
Taylor, I feel like Taylor gets so sick and tired of it sometimes. But he's just like, my god, shut up. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So I was like mid thought, and I'm like, oh my god, what are they laughing about now? It could be something completely random every time.
It was the stupidest thing.
I just made fun of the way she exclaimed.
Okay, one thing though, I do want to mention Zoe, as far as Yuji as a main character, when he gives that whole like, I'm a cog speech.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that as far as Yuji's character development at this point in time?
Because
not a lot of MCs have that kind of mindset.
Sure.
In terms of shonen.
Mm-hmm. Especially one who was so goofy. Mr. I love a girl like Jennifer Lawrence. Let's go play Smash Bros. Who has gone through so much. It's interesting. I've always loved Yuji, and I still love Yuji, if that says anything.
Yeah.
You know?
I just think it was one of those things where I don't know if it really affected people in the sense of like not liking him anymore. It was just like people were trying to see where people were always talking about, oh, this is a subversion of the shonen MC and Yuji's such a different MC than everybody else, which is kind of true, but it's one of those things where it's, you know, I don't think it was really a subversion. It was more so just how the story is told. Like, you get a very happy-go-lucky kid that
it's more it's just written kind of well.
I think a lot of people are mad because of the fact that like every shonen main boy character is like, I came from nothing, but I could be the best there ever was and ever is and ever will be. Me. It's just me all the time. Yuji was written from the beginning a very selfless person who didn't think like other people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a main character who was nice to everybody, including the girl that everyone treated poorly because she was fat. Which is like all these little things show Yuji's character of being like, I didn't want to be a part of the ghost club. I don't really care about ghosts, but their club would have closed without me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be in sports because I'm too good at sports. So I'd rather have the sports people play sports. I didn't want to help with this Sukuna thing, but I don't want this guy to die in front of me, so I'll eat the finger.
Yeah.
He has always shown that he does not want to be the star. He wants to live a very happy, calm life. His life has already sucked enough. He's lost both his parents. He's lost his grandfather. And the only reason why he joined in on this was because he enjoys to help. And his internal struggle is, am I helping because I like to help people, or am I helping because I want to help myself because I don't want to be alone? That's his fight. And I think that's more realistic than any other shonen character. So the fact that he wants to just be a cog in the machine, use me, I will get us to the end, I think has always been Yuji's center. And if people have chosen to ignore that, they don't know how to read.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making fun of you. Just read more.
And it's their whole thing with his granddad too, where it's like, and one thing I thought was cool, somebody kind of pointed it out. I don't know who did, but they basically were doing like a deep dive into Yuji's character. And they basically were just like, you think on the surface that his grandfather saying, help people before he died, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You would think that'd be like a situation where that's like helpful advice, but people are saying that it's kind of, and it's kind of mentioned with Principal Yago when he dies. And he gives that information, says, it's a curse from me to you. Now I'm giving you
that's
this
also Nami.
I'm Nami too.
But Nami said he was like, I don't want to curse you.
Yeah,
but now I'm dying.
The granddad said, "Hey, help people," but that's more of a cursing Yuji.
It is
than it is actual helpful advice, because now it's like Yuji has to like help people more so, not necessarily
out of obligation,
like out of obligation as opposed to like out of the goodness of his own heart.
Okay, and this is, again, this is another big thing that we don't talk about when we think about like superheroes, when we think about like saviors of the world and all that stuff. The easier choice is to become the villain. It's to stop caring about people, do whatever you want, let the whole world burn. That's the easy choice. The hard choice, shown by our Superman in the most latest movie and many other characters, is I need to continue to pick myself up, even if no one's rooting for me but me, and I have to help people because this is what I'm meant to do. And that's beautiful. And Yuji's doing a great job. And yeah, anyway. I'm not ready for the end. I'm not ready for the end. I know I'm going to go on like a hiatus, just like I did with Death Note.
I liked how that was linked together, where it's like those kind of parting words that people are saying to these people in their last dying breaths or whatever are more so curses as opposed to uplifting words to help them, to help people. I think it's a really, really cool concept, because they all one of the bigger concepts in JJK in terms of like curses. And you know, we talk about this with the, as far as like the exorcism genre in general, where like, you know, vengeful spirits or unresolved feelings from the past life, you know, it's like negative harmful emotions in death or whatever. So that's why I think it's like such a cool concept, for like all these parting words are actually curses instead of ways to help people. I do want to mention, though, kind of, you mentioned shonen protagonists. I don't know if you've been reading any other different mangas lately, but I think the only shonen romance protagonist headspace is a little bit different and a lot of people are, and I think one thing I'm starting to notice is those characters are starting to become, I'm starting to like those characters now, because some of their mindsets are a little bit different, and I think it's really cool to see.
Cool.
They still have the same like I'm gonna save everybody kind of outlook, which, you know, that's kind of like just par for the course when it comes to shonen. But none of them, from at least the ones that I've read, have this like I'm gonna be the next Hokage, or I'm gonna be the whatever, I'm gonna be number
I'm
one hero.
I'm gonna be the number one hero.
Exactly.
Right.
And one, our final thing I wanted to say for this podcast, I want to mention Kagurabachi, because the new episode, new chapters just got released, and it's, first off, this manga is a fucking banger. Like, it's really, really, really good. It's you could tell the mangaka does a great job. You can show his love for movies, and movie framing and cinematography bleeds into all of his panels. It's a samurai or a katana type.
Yes, I had to just see it.
Yeah, like hack and slash thing. There is a tweet, if anybody wants to try to read this at all. Did I save it? I hope I saved it. But basically it was like, this one guy tweeted, imagine if the son of Oppenheimer goes, I need to gather up all the nukes in the world so that way nobody uses them. But he keeps getting jumped by people that go, oh my God, dude, your dad was really good at making nukes. I love him.
Making nukes.
And these nukes, I'm assuming these nukes are swords in this manga? Or are they still bombs?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yes. They're swords. They're swords. No, go ahead.
I was just looking it up. I was looking up the show because I couldn't visualize it. And then I'm just seeing a bunch of things about it. The writer of Kagurabachi was inspired by Naruto, Chainsaw Man, and the Western comic series Batman.
Oh, that's fun.
Isn't that fun? I thought that'd be a fun little
thing
to put in here.
Basically, to kind of go off on that tweet that I saw, essentially it's like his Chihiro, his dad, was the creator of these like magical enchanted blades. He's in these katana, right? And these katana were used to fight an enemy in this big war. And they're all these swords are like contracted to certain people. When the war ended, all these people were still contracted, but then this other like evil secret society of sorcerers came and killed Chihiro's dad and stole all of the enchanted blades, right? So Chihiro grows up and his sole goal is like, I'm going to one, get revenge on the people that killed my dad, and two, I want to gather up all of the swords again, that way nobody can use them. And essentially these swords are quite literally weapons of mass destruction.
Sure.
Like it is a one-to-one comparison of what happens when countries have nukes. It's like it could not be more cut and dry.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Like it has a lot of like political undertones in terms of like the history is determined by the victor or that
That's
kind of
cool.
stuff like that in it. And so yeah, Chihiro's whole goal is like, I want to gather up all these blades, but all these people that have them that he fights against are like, bro, your dad was the fucking best at making these nukes. It's awesome. It's
insane.
But like stuff like him or Chihiro, and then you get like Sakamoto days, and you get even like in some other smaller, you know, titles in shonen, not every main character has that kind of I want to be the president kind of outlook on stuff. And I think that's
right.
A cool change of pace for a lot of these stories that are coming out. So I just wanted to make that known.
I had a question. Did Kagurabachi, did an anime ever get announced?
No, but I think it's close. I think it's one of those things where
gotcha.
It's gotten so popular that I think it's close. And they just ended, which is crazy because it's 200 chapters so far that they made? Hold on.
Damn.
Is this 200 chapters? No, 112. My fault. There's 112 chapters that have come out so far, and this is just, and it, the last chapter is the end of part one.
Sick.
Which is super, super sick.
Love that.
It's all this build up just for, and like you're reading it and you're like, this feels like the end of a story for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's
right.
the last panel goes Kagurabachi part one end. And I was like, oh, he's Hanazoko's cooking.
It's kind of like how people were saying, because of the way that the One Piece anime got reorganized.
Yeah.
They were like, every arc has been a chapter in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're on the next chapter, like, or a sub chapter, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, Oda's just been cooking one really long first
Could
chapter.
You imagine? I would be so if it gets to the end of One Piece and Oda goes end of part one, I'm like, you're insane. You're an insane person. Because what do you mean?
Keep it going forever, please.
Before we sign off, I do have to mention, I had just remembered, you know what did get announced and is about to come out this year? Umamusume, the movie.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's
the horse
right.
Races.
Which we have to go see.
We have to go see. I also need to play the game. But yes,
we
I do
want
to see it.
We have
and
to
you
go
have
see
to wear
it.
The shirt.
And I have the shirt. My Dr.
Yes.
Pepper Umamusume shirt.
Yes.
Oh, I
it's
forgot
so good.
About that. When does that come out? When does that movie come out? Hold on.
I don't remember. I sent you guys the video when I was watching.
It should be a summer release.
I think
when
it is.
When is horse racing popular?
I think it is a summer in the spring.
Ah, well.
Horse races, you got to think upstate New York. So it's very spring.
Okay.
It says Umamusume Pretty Derby, beginning of a new era, set for North American theatrical release
Pretty
on
Derby.
February 27th. So
springtime.
Oh, around 12 the corner.
Days. 12 days.
Fun.
So the Japanese release was like 2 years ago, but I guess they're releasing it in North America. Yeah, May 24th, 2024.
Listen, we weren't ready for Horse Girls 2 years ago. Okay, we've taken the time, we've done the studying, we're here now.
The game was fun, but I just can't spend that much money.
Gacha games are nasty work. I just can't do it.
And we were so close. I was so close to getting hooked in that video.
Man.
One more shiny and they would have got me.
Like, literally, we're like, okay, we got a couple bad rolls.
That's one of my favorite videos you guys have ever made.
Like, we got a couple bad rolls. We need to just kind of call it a day. And yep. Zoe just looks at me and is like, and what are we doing again?
He literally did this. He went, and what are we doing with that?
What are we doing again? Good. I'm like, oh. And then we end up getting the fucking rainbow colored.
Yeah.
Like the new release or whatever. Yep. Oh, just,
yeah. It was good.
Set that man free in Vegas.
Man,
I was like, in that moment, I think I finally understood why people throw fucking bans at games like that. Because, like, beginner's luck is crazy, and then, like, you'll probably never get that roll for years. Yep. But you just keep throwing money at it, and that's nuts.
Yep.
That's insane. Before we sign off, Zoe... I know some music had come out recently. Do you have any music recommendations? I haven't even done it in a while with all three of us, but you got any like music recs?
I've been doing the 1001 albums with Sam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's a good album? Honestly, you know what? You know what I've been bumping? Every time I finish a new album every day, I go back to, and we didn't talk about it last week because it was Super Bowl, but Debí Tirar Más Fotos.
Yes. I was about to mention that if you didn't.
I've been going back to it a lot. And I sent... Kayla, I sent Taylor a voice note the day after the Super Bowl saying the energy in Miami is palpable. You can, like, cut through it with a knife. And I was listening to the outro of the album, La Mudanza.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically, I told Taylor, if Kendrick Lamar hopped on an Earth, Wind, and Fire beat, because it's classic dance, like salsa music, but he's spitting. He's fucking spitting. And it ends with, I'm from the P fucking R, which is, that album's so good.
That day, we were all Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
I was honorary Puerto Rican. Like, literally, like, I was waiting when he was towards the end of this role. He's like, you know, naming all of the countries, and I'm like, Colombia, Cuba. And I did it, and I was like, I was emotional. It was the only good thing that happened during the Super Bowl, because Super Bowl this year was boring.
A little boring. And there was 9 million AI fucking ads.
Literally, okay, I want to talk about this another day, and I can bring it up. I don't know how I'm going to mix it in with anime, but I'm going to find a way to spin it so I can talk about it somewhere and yell about it. I collect art books because artiste. And one of my art books is The Art of Marketing in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really beautifully illustrated book of different marketing for, you know, food and this and that and the other. And the Super Bowl, for regulars like me who don't watch football, was all about seeing all of these products shine in new ways with creative directors and doodly-doo. What a disappointment. We are entering, I mean, we've been in a dystopian era, but we are entering into something dark and dastardly. Because what do you mean everything was crypto? Everything was about weight loss, and everything was about AI.
Everything was, and there was a lot of weight loss.
There was a lot of weight loss one, but ears should go up when there's a lot of talk about weight loss, because those are the years where we are thinner financially. Weight loss and money have a lot to do with each other. Weight loss, or weight in general, and class have a lot to do with each other.
Yeah.
And the fact that celebrities have all been looking wafer thin as of late to make it look cool to be skinny and that you haven't eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Red flag. Yeah, because we're going to, I don't know, bro. Florida's hitting a drought. And then they're trying to build an AI center in the Everglades. I can't. So I'll find a way to tie it into anime somehow, or I don't know, maybe somehow. We just have a political rant one day. I don't know.
Somehow, some way.
But as for music, I'm just listening to the Wuthering Heights album because I saw Wuthering Heights the other day and it was really good. And that's what I'm doing.
I'm seeing Wuthering Heights on Tuesday, and
yeah, I'm gonna.
I don't know if you're gonna like it, but some of the shots are very pretty.
It looks pretty, but it's also
not supposed to be liked. I think that people are forgetting that.
But I think when you
like the characters are not supposed to be liked.
We're supposed to sign off. Okay, I'll just say when you have a story like Wuthering Heights, where the main crux of the issue, where it's not a romance, it's a tragedy story. I read the book in high school. You're not supposed to like any of the characters. And Heathcliff is supposed to be either Romani or Black, and that's a big part of his character. And Jacob Elordi playing a Romani or Black character doesn't make any fucking sense. Okay, sorry. I'm done.
No.
I'm done.
Go off, King.
It's a tragedy because they introduce certain things towards the back half of the book that are supposed to make you feel like sorry for these characters trying to break generational curses. And from what I've seen in trailers, because I'm probably not going to see the movie because I just don't have the time, I can tell that's not what the case is for this movie specifically. Mm-hmm. And what the fuck time period are they in with these dresses and set pieces? We're all over the place. Yeah. What are we doing?
I didn't read the book. I escaped reality. Okay. There's a lot of things that shouldn't be there. Jacob Elordi's hot. Margot Robbie's hot. I had a good time. So if you pull away from everything, it's an okay movie.
I think if it wasn't called Wuthering Heights, it'd be fine.
Whoa. Thank you.
Honestly,
that's what I'm saying.
Honestly, that. It's literally that. It's just that.
Because One Battle After Another is based on Vinland, but he changed so much that he didn't call it Vinland. He called it One Battle After Another.
Oh. Yeah, if we had talked about that, it would be a different time. But we have to sign off.
Yeah.
We have to sign off. Because if I start getting into my literary bag, it's going to be a really, really tough.
What's very funny for the listeners is that sometimes I know that we all start saying we got to sign off, we got to go, I want all the listeners to know that when we're done recording, we are talking about these things in detail for at least another 30 minutes.
Today I have to go, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Hang out with Emily's family.
That's cool.
You gotta make sure we're good on that. Okay, signing off for real this time. Nothing else we have to say?
No.
You guys, we good?
Uh-uh.
Okay. I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia, Astro Vizo, KX Everything. See you guys next time. Peace.
Bye.